sweat technique.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. What are the most pressing questions for the Astros post All-Star break? 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776. 1509, what percent would you give on a trade for a starting pitcher that involves Rake Meyers?
I don't think that there's a high percentage there. I don't think they're looking to trade Jake Meyers. I think that they're looking for starting pitching. Yes, I don't think that the trades are going to involve him as much. So I'll say 18%.
I'm going to say 1%. I don't see any situation where Jake Meyers is traded. Like when you traded, when James Click traded Miles Straw, they had his replacement. They had two guys that they rather have played in center field more than Dusty Baker wanted. They wanted Chaz McCormick and Jake Meyers to play more often in center field than Miles Straw. You don't have that replacement. Like, can Chaz McCormick play center? Yes, he can. Do you want Chaz McCormick to be your center fielder over Jake Meyers? No, you don't. Can Joey Loperfido man center field? Yeah, he can man center field. Can he play it above average defensively? That's still to be determined. I have questions there. Certainly not to the ability of Jake Meyers, who I think is going to be in the running for a gold glove in center field. You don't really have a center fielder down in the farm that I think is ready to contribute to the level of Jake Meyers. Like, Pedro Leon has played center field. If you bring him up, is he contributing to what Jake, like, to the Jake Meyers production? No. I think it's 1% maximum.
Well, and the reason why, and I, you know, I did say I don't think that there's any way that they trade him, but if they do, I said it's that because I got to give him I have everybody. There's always the ability to trade. We've seen some things that have blown my mind with some of the trades that have been made in the past where I thought, you know, that they weren't going to make a move, and then that person ended up being traded. You mentioned one of them. I just thought Miles Straw was the guy that they were hell-bent on not trading, and then it kind of caught my attention going, I never thought they were going to trade him, and then they traded away their starting center fielder. So, I mean, maybe the 18's too high.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to the Miles Straw time, though, they had Chaz McCormick who was producing and was producing at a higher offensive level than Miles Straw, and you had Jake Meyers who was really producing in AAA too. Maybe you could make the case that Leon's producing offensively, but you have a center fielder who's playing at a high level, whereas Miles Straw really wasn't playing at too high of a level. What are the pressing questions you have for the Astros post All-Star break? 713-780-3776. What do you have, Blankers?
I think the two for me, the way I would level the conversation and say there's one kind of outside, one internally. The one outside is, who are they going to get to help them with starting pitching? I think that should be the number one priority for this team going between now and the trade deadline. Who are they going to be able to bring in? Who are they going to be able to find? Is there going to be some guy that's not just a guy that can kind of help them get to where they need to go? And then from the perspective of internally, who's going to be healthy? You know, when are they getting guys back, and how many guys are going to make it back? We don't know if Luis Garcia is going to make it back. We assume he is, but when? Caratini, when's he back? Tucker, when's he back? Verlander, when's he back? The health of this team is so hyper important to the success in the second half and making the postseason that as much as I know that the external importance is go get a starting pitcher or two, the main thing to me on top of that is when are we going to get these guys back and who are going to be back at the end of the day?
I think you can only count on two guys to come back and be a contributor for you. Everything else is a bonus. Kyle Tucker's one of them, and then Justin Verlander. But I'm not counting on Penn Murphy. I'm not counting on Luis Garcia, and I'm not counting on Lance McCullers. So to me, if you're Dana Brown, you have to operate that you're not getting those three guys back.
Well, Caratini's in there too, right?
Yeah, Caratini. I forgot about him. Yeah, he's about to be back.
Yeah, no, and I think that you're right. I can't. Again, with what we've seen and not been able to kind of see come to fruition in terms of guys that are supposed to be on their way back or guys that could potentially help you, it's nice to have a Penn Murphy on your roster that's a guy that's internal that could possibly contribute at a certain point. Just like it's nice to have a Lance McCullers, but you already know what you've been through with him. And with Luis Garcia, that's a major surgery that you don't want to rush him back. And two, you just don't know because everybody's different about when they're ready to come back. So, yeah, I don't know that you can count on any of those guys. I hope Verlander's back and back sooner rather than later because he plays such a huge role in determining, you know, your starting rotation.
Huge role?
I just think he's too important. I think he still plays a huge role when you get to the postseason in a guy that has, you know, has his resume and has his experience and still has enough ability to be a guy that you have, I think you have to rely on.
See, I think the biggest factor of having Verlander back is the fact that he's a veteran pitcher who can give you innings. I'm not sure he's one of your best three starters.
I don't know what some of those starters, in particular, two of the younger guys are going to be come playoff time.
But if you're starting a game tomorrow, are you Verlander or Blanco?
I would say Blanco, but at the same time, I can understand the argument of Verlander.
If you're starting, I would say Blanco. If you're starting a game tomorrow and you had to win to save your life, Verlander or Hunter Brown?
Verlander.
I'd go Brown.
I'm going Verlander.
All right. Questions that I have is kind of like how Espada manages this team, especially the pitching staff, because you talk about like innings workload for the starting pitchers. Do you add a sixth starter? Who is that sixth starter? And then also the bullpen. Like Brian Abreu has been used a lot. The big three have been used a lot. Do we see Joe Espada continue his like, we're up by four runs, we're going to deploy our leverage guys? Quite frankly, I'd like him to get away from that. Now, if you have a three-run lead, okay, let's deploy the leverage guys. Four-run lead, I'm not. I'm trying to mop it up with my lower leverage guys, and if they give up a run and now all of a sudden it's a tight game, okay, now deploy your big leverage arms. So I want to see that. Texture, 0002, pitcher, maybe another pitcher, but if Dana Brown is allowed to go big, give me a bat. Big John is serviceable, but you know. Yes, starting pitcher is the biggest need at the trade deadline, July 30th trade deadline, which is an evening trade deadline, by the way. It'll be a fun show on that Tuesday. Mm-hmm. The problem here is that every contender needs a pitcher. And you go back and you look at the trade that was made last week with Kansas City in Washington, just like a good relief pitcher from the Nationals got traded to the Royals. What the Royals gave for a good, solid reliever that does have club control was a very high return. Mm-hmm. So you have all of these people that all these teams are going to be wanting to trade for pitching. The Astros are going to have to probably overspend for the quality that they're getting back. So it's going to be tough because you have a lot of competitors trying to trade for pitching because everybody wants to be in it. And I think that the Nationals kind of set the bar that's pretty darn high.
Well, yeah, it definitely said to the sellers, hey, you could be in some good business, and business could be really good depending on how this market plays out. But the early indication is that you're going to get, you know, a huge return on investment. The question that I would have for you is, let's take starting pitching out of it and say that that's pretty obvious to be the number one priority to go into trade deadline. Number two, is it a relief pitcher or is it an extra bat?
Bat.
You think so?
Yeah. I don't think a relief pitcher that you bring in is really going to help you from a playoff point of view, like who your relievers are currently. I don't think you're adding a reliever who really joins the pecking order of like your top three. You're not acquiring anybody that's better than Abreu. You might acquire a guy who's like your fourth best reliever, but at what cost are you going to be willing to spend for somebody who's your fourth best reliever that might be somebody else's top or second best reliever?
But
I don't think they're going to pay that price.
But to the scenario that you laid out, if you could get a guy that was a sixth inning quality type guy that's, you know, could also do kind of the seventh and eighth if you did have a four-run lead.
Sure.
I think that has a pretty good level of importance because, again, as much as Dana says McCullers could end up being that guy, I'm not counting on him.
The problem with this, though, isn't so much the Astros situation.
Sure.
It's the every other team in Major League Baseball because let's just call that guy, you know, Joe Blow. Joe Blow is a guy who would be the Astros' fourth-best reliever. He's going to be a contender's second-best reliever. So the Astros aren't going to pay the price for their fourth-best reliever that all these contenders would pay for their second-best reliever. So that it doesn't add up to where the Astros are adding like this super quality arm. I think they could add a bullpen arm, but I don't think it's going to be a dude who's like, you know, a stud. I think it's going to be like a solid guy that's, you know, Phil Maton type.
See, that's, and I wouldn't mind a Phil Maton type either, but I think that, look, and I tend to agree with you that the bat would be the second priority, but I also think that one of the things that they're going to have to weigh is the level of competition based on the need of the rest of the teams that are going to be buyers. Because I think that, like you said, starting pitching is at an unbelievable premium, and the prices are going to be bumped up. If the relief pitching, the market is set by what just happened with the Royals-Nats trade, then you have to be leery of the fact that maybe that's going to be a higher market than you expected too. Now you have to go and look and say, hey, I still have options in my system for that kind of relief pitcher.
Yeah.
But I got to identify that if I have maybe the market's not as hot for some of the guys in the bat market, but I know that if I get an extra bat, it takes me to a different level offensively, potentially.
I think there's a premium on everything this trade deadline because there's so many contenders and not many sellers. I don't think that the Astros are going to be willing to pay a premium on a reliever. I think that they could be willing to pay a premium on a starter. I don't think they're going to add a significant bat, quite frankly. I think they'll add a bat who is a platoon candidate in left field. I think they're going to quit Chaz. I think they're going to quit on Chaz. I don't think they'll trade him unless they can trade him for an arm. Maybe they can find a team that's desperate for a center fielder that's not a contender that can wait out this struggle and hope that he rebounds going forward. Maybe that's a way to get like a decent arm, is that you flip Chaz McCormick, who's still under club control for a while, to a team who might have a surplus in relief pitching or doesn't value relief pitching because they're not a contender. But I think they're going to acquire a right-handed outfielder that they can share time in left field with. So not a star, not a big name, but somebody who would help your roster, and you'd rather give him at-bats than Chaz McCormick at-bats. And then the same thing when it comes to the starting pitching. I think they will be willing to pay a premium on starters. I don't think they'll be willing to pay a premium on relievers. 8-3-4-1, I think they just stick with what we've got and hope that some of these pitchers get back and make a good run on the tail end of this thing. I think that will make the playoffs with what we've got in hand. I think they might be priced into that. The price is going to be high.
Mm-hmm. But with all that being said, I still think they're going to make a move or two. I think that they're still going – they know that making the playoffs isn't good enough. They know that – and I think they feel confident in
that. But I don't think you're adding a starter or a bat who, like, is a, you know, a rising tide that raises all ships. I think it just kind of completes you.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. But if you get a starting pitcher, even if it becomes like your fifth, sixth starter, it allows you to go to six starters when you need to save the arms that you need to have.
But that's not helping you in the playoffs. A fifth or sixth starter is not helping you in the playoffs. Might help you get there, but he's not helping you in the playoffs.
Why not? If that fifth or sixth starter that helps you get to the playoffs then can be sent to the bullpen and becomes a guy that can give you innings in the bullpen.
Kind of a swing guy, but if you have a guy who's a fifth or sixth starter, he's probably not going to be one of your top three relievers.
And maybe that's too low to say fifth or sixth, but just back into your starting rotation guy that you acquire that gets you where you need to go regular season, but then maybe fills a secondary role come playoff time that you have more confidence in than the guys currently on your roster in the bullpen.
Yeah, I just have a hard time envisioning that. Like, I don't know that you're acquiring a fourth or fifth starter that all of a sudden is better than Taylor Scott has given you. Like, that seems a little far-fetched.
No, not Taylor Scott per se, but yeah, you're right.
Like a Cal Quantrill is a guy who would be a 4, 5, 6 starter for you. Like, that guy's not really helping your bullpen.
But aside from him, I still think there's a couple. There's some guys out there that might be able to do both. And at least give you more strength in your bullpen, because you know as well as I do in the playoffs, the managers are going to make decisions a lot quicker. There's going to be a lot more pitching changes, and there's going to be a lot more guys you have to rely on than just your four best arms in the back of your bullpen.
I mean, they're pretty willing to throw those guys every single day once you get into the playoffs because of the days off. So, I mean, if you're looking at Scott, Abreu, Presley, Hader as your dudes, that's four innings.
Sure.
Four innings right there.
But I think that a lot of times – with starters not going as long and like I said, quicker decisions being made, yeah, that you might need an extra guy or two that can give you an inning or three batters when needed.
9953, I am most worried that Tucker will pull a Hader from last year and not give it his all because of his contract year, which is next year. Maybe it's not coming back when team doctors clear him. Maybe it's dealing less bases. I think he's jaded from arbitration debacle, and he's also slated to get a lot of money, so why risk it?
I don't think anything that of that comes into play right now, and I don't think Kyle Tucker's that kind of guy that what I've seen. But I don't anticipate that being a problem. The bigger problem to me is that this bruise, that granted it's a fluky thing that it was hit twice in the exact same area, but boy, it's taken a whole hell of a long time, and you still don't know when you're getting him back.
I don't think there's anything nefarious like this. And in fact, Kyle Tucker and the Astros agreed on a number that avoided arbitration this past offseason. It was two offseasons ago where they didn't avoid arbitration, went to the arbiter, ruled in favor of the Astros. But this past offseason, they actually came to terms before it ever went to an arbiter. So I don't think there's anything there. I think Kyle Tucker is just an incredibly bony guy. And when you have incredibly bony guys, that a ball to your bony bones is going to last longer.
Dr. Branham again.
Like, if he was pudgy, yeah. If he was a pudgy guy, like if he was Alejandro Kirk from Toronto, I'm not even sure he misses a game because he's pudgy. He's got a lot of meat there. Whenever
so
you don't
padding.
Have meat and you're bony.
Can you get the meat on your
I don't
shin?
Think you can get fat yeah, you can padding have,
you can
on top
get,
of your
little,
shin bone.
You can get a little meat everywhere.
I
yeah.
can get your calf and the you backside of your
yeah,
muscle.
Not
I'm just not sure you can get it on the top of your
no,
shin.
You can slim anywhere. You can have muscle
Branham's
there.
Dr. Branham's a little misinformed here.
No, it's not. You can add muscle in that spot. Look at that thing
on top of your shin bone?
I'm ripped. The top of my shin bone is jacked. That's my best muscle.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. That doesn't say much for the biceps and triceps then.
I didn't say that it should. The Astros locker, where do the innings come from? I think you're probably trading for a pitcher at some point. If you don't, then you're looking at like, okay, Jake Bloss, you're part of our rotation. AJ Blue Ball, what's going on? How long until Tucker returns? What is your guess there on Tucker's return?
I still think he's 2 weeks away. I think that when we come out of this and start the series in Seattle, I don't anticipate seeing him till closer to the end of July.
I listened to Dana on the quarterback show today with Ross for some reason. But he's talking about how he's still hitting in the cages and he's playing catch. Like, I feel like, and he still has a rehab. I think that Kyle Tucker makes his return to the Astros. We should play a guess the date on a Kyle Tucker return, by the way. Let's do that tomorrow. Okay. I'm going to call it.
The month might be on the soft side.
Well, I'm going August 9th. Let me make sure the Astros play on August
9th. Are we doing this segment now or are we doing it tomorrow?
We'll do it tomorrow, but that's my guess. So y'all can play around with it. Let me make sure the Astros play on August 9th before I set my date on
specific.
August 9th.
Yeah,
August
9th. It's going to be a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, guess the date. That's what you got to do. You got to be specific.
Tomorrow.
The other questions, how long can they continue to keep Montero on this roster? I think Montero's off the roster in August.
When Verlander comes back?
No, because if Verlander, well, maybe, because Verlander could be an August return. But if they make a trade, it could be sooner than that.
It could be sooner than that. Yeah, I think we said this the other day. I think he's the odd man out, the next either guy coming back off the injury list or the next first trade being made. I think Montero is the casualty from that.
Yeah, yeah.
I look at how long they made it linger with Abreu. And I feel like this is another one of those bitter pills to swallow.
They already made it linger with Montero, though? I mean, his ERA since June 1st is like 8.30-something.
Yeah.
They've already made it linger with him.
But the fact that that dollar figure hovers for another year, I think they're going to give him every opportunity yet, and I don't think they've given him all of them that they're going to give him.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. What are the most pressing questions post-All-Star break you have for the Astros? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Junior Bronco says Cal Quantrill is the only arm they can afford. You might be right. I mean, the price is going to be high for these mid-starting pitchers. I don't think they can be shopping at the top of the market, like Crochet.
I mean, they can afford Fetty.
Maybe. I mean, Fetty's got a sub-3 ERA.
No, he's been great.
Fetty's not going to demand a high trade return.
But considering his track record and his age, I don't think the price is going to be insurmountable for the Astros.
This mediocre reliever for Washington just went for an incredible amount. Incredible amount. And then all of a sudden you have a starter who has under a 3 ERA. He's not going to get a, maybe not a king's ransom, but a prince's ransom.
I mean, Quantrill had two really good seasons with Cleveland, though, in 21 and 22. So it's not like he's... he's not like he's some bum that they can afford because he's been terrible.
No, he's solid.
But
he's
the bigger
solid.
Danger with all of it, too, is if you take the Kansas City example in the fact that they've just been stocking up draft picks and sucking for a long period of time, and they now know, not like the Astros trying to get to like a World Series level, they just need to get in to make an impact on their fan base and show progress to where they've got a loaded system that they're willing to overpay because it means more just to get in for them, whereas the Astros have different kind of expectations.
Yeah. What team did you say that would overpay? Anybody?
The Royals just did.
The Royals.
In a move that they did because they've already just been stockpiling picks by not being very good.
Yeah, but the Astros are going to have to contend with those teams.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's why, because the market is going to be so difficult across the board because you have so many more teams that have different priorities but have a lot more loaded farm systems that are going to, just to make the playoffs, they're willing to give someone like that too much.
Yeah, it's going to be I can't wait to see the returns that these starters get. I think it's going to be high. 7612, Saquon Barkley would have taken 5 foul balls off his legs. It's true. If Saquon Barkley lined a foul ball off of his shin, he probably would have not even been taken out of the game. 7560, Tucker is hurt. He has a huge draw in right field seats. We are lucky we have players who have stood in and still get got hits, homers. So let's not rush till he's healed. I agree with that last sentence. I don't think you should be rushing Kyle Tucker back. You've been able to keep the ship afloat. In fact, you've been able to chase down the Mariners. You're only a game back. So, yeah, Kyle Tucker should not be playing until he's 100%. You're in the race without him. The most important thing is that you have Kyle Tucker to finish the season, not here like quickly after the All-Star break.
Yeah, the beauty of all of this is that you've done what most people said couldn't be done in terms of not just the division lead, seed, but being a wild card, and you have options to get there. You can't afford to rush him back, and then he's dealing with a nagging injury the rest of the season. So you might as well, if you've waited this long and you are as close as you mentioned, then you might as well just ride it out to make sure he is 100% or as close as you can get him to it before you bring him back. Because with him in the middle of that lineup, with Yordan and the way guys have been coming on, that's like making a move, you know, by the deadline.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. Mike Golic Sr. texting in says, fat don't crack. It's a thing. Kyle Tucker's slim and skinny. I'm not messing with that guy.
I just question fat on the shin.
Yeah, overeat for a few weeks. You'll start to notice some fat getting on the top
of your leg, above the shin.
There's fat everywhere on the human body. Yeah.
But like you said, your muscle is on. I think your muscles would be on the sides and maybe behind the shin.
Yeah, with the calf.
Yeah, I just don't know where your muscles are on the front of the shin.
Absolutely on the front. Flex it a little bit. Flex your toes and feel that muscle right there on your shin. There you go, right there. Look at that guy. Yes, there's muscle there. Come on, it's anatomy 101.
Below and around 713-780-3776.
Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. I took a class in this long time ago.
I did too.
Ryan, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Ryan?
What's sports, fellas? Hashtag free or easy, hashtag pay the man. Anyways, I think the answer is pretty obvious. Who we need to go out and get? We need to bring back Machete, and we need to bring back Grinky. What do you guys think? Later.
Thanks, Keith.
You just made the list.
No, Ryan, no, he didn't. He didn't make the list.
He made my list for the Machete take.
No, Machete should be back on the Astros by next week.
As a coach.
As an assistant bench coach, catching coach.
He didn't say as a player.
Okay, all right.
Ryan didn't say as a player.
All right, I apologize, Ryan.
Honestly, why not sign Zach Greinke to a minor league deal? You don't think he would sell a few more seats in Sugarland? I would go watch. No, I wouldn't. But some people might. Some people might watch Zach Greinke.
Well,
go pitch a consolation
it's down the street
field.
From you.
Right, and my kids like to go to the games.
I would love. I mean, you have Zach Greinke night. You can.
He's calling us all his own pitches.
Look, from a marketing perspective,
he's yelling them.
You set up a section of cardboard. You set up a section of cardboard cutout people that could call the Greinke section. He might sit with them every now and then.
Say he will sit with them after
those
the,
are some
after
of his peeps.
Yeah.
You know that he's going to be doing the heavy grunting and all the kind of. Telling batters what's coming, and because he's got a name that people know, I think he'd sell some tickets.
No, I think Ryan's right. I would do the same. I would bring back Maldonado as a coach, and I'd sign Zach Greinke to a minor league deal. It'd be a lot of fun. 8341 to pick up something that's going to help us. We're going to have to give something up.
Thanks for that analysis. Take.
Mm-hmm. And we really don't have anything to give up. I'd rather go ahead and sit pat and continue building these guys that we got on the roster now. Now, I mean, If Dana Brown doesn't think Pedro Leon's an everyday starter, you trade Pedro Leon for the best starting pitcher you can get.
Yeah.
And then every other player like that. If you think he's an everyday starter, then you don't trade him. So it just depends on your evaluation of a player. A couple more from the Astros locker. He had a lot of questions. Is Pedro Leon ready to take the next step, or is he Jose Siri 2.0? See, I think if he's Jose Siri, I would like him to be Jose Siri.
Yeah,
if
he's Jose Siri, he's got a cannon, he's lightning quick, he's got pop.
I mean, he's talking about impact. He's not saying apple for apple, but Leon does have some pop.
He's a very small guy, too, and I haven't seen that pop. I don't
so
know
is
how
Altuve.
That, I just don't know how that pop's going to translate to the next level either, but I also know that you've got a guy that I think he's predominantly a center fielder, and you've got your center fielder, so if that's the guy you choose to get rid of, I'm fine with it.
You could use a right-handed bat who hits left-handed pitching. That's been a huge hole for the Astros right now. Like, Chaz McCormick is still playing a lot in left field against left-handed pitching, and he's been atrocious. So I think there is a need for a right-handed outfield bat that can hit lefties. Is it Pedro Leon? I personally don't think so. I would trade for Tommy Pham. I would trade for somebody like that that basically takes over for Chaz, which begs the question, what do they do with Chaz? I think that is a pressing post-All-Star break question.
I think both of those guys should be in conversations to limit what you have to give up to get what you need. I think Chaz and Leon should be in those conversations because I honestly don't think you're going to get another – that Chaz at best was his best last year, and I don't know you're ever going to see another year like that. And I think that if you could get a Tommy Pham type or a guy that's a veteran outfielder that does what you said that you want them to do but can hit lefties – right, you know, and can play the outfield and be a Chaz type player. That's a veteran with a good resume. I'm all for that.
6856. If a team calls with a package and they're asking for Pena, do the Astros give him up?
I don't see any scenario where they give up Jeremy Pena.
Who's your shortstop? Like, I mean, Mauricio Dubon to me is not an everyday shortstop. So my answer to that is a hard no.
Have you not to change it back to Paige Leon, but have you guys seen Paige Leon's numbers this year?
Yeah.
I was surprisingly, because for the most of his minor league career, I remember looking in the past, as his slash line was not that impressive. But this year he's hitting .309 with a OPS just over .900.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's he's 26, so maybe it's you dismiss it for being way older than what a triple A guy would normally be. But maybe it's worth the call up. Maybe it's worth a shot. I mean, hitting over 300, over 900 OPS. He's got 17 bombs, 21 steals. I don't know. It seems like it could be worth a shot.
I think he is a guy who gets called up if you don't trade for an outfielder at the deadline, and I think it might come at the expense of Chaz McCormick. Chaz McCormick doesn't heat up over the next couple of weeks, and you just like, okay, we cannot afford to continue to give this guy at bats. You don't make a trade for an outfield bat by July 30th. I think they would get Pedro Leon a shot.
See, that's what I was going to say. Do you think that he's the guy that gets called up if Chaz gets sent down? I think that before you even get to the September call-ups, if you make the hard decision on Chaz, then there's a guy that warrants seeing if he can hit major league pitching the way he's killing AAA.
Yeah, I think it's two-prong. I think it's Chaz continues his struggles, does not come back around, and you don't trade for an outfield bat. Mm-hmm. Because if you trade for a Tommy Pham, you're not calling up Pedro Leon. Like, why? You have your platoon in left with Loperfido and Pham. You have Jake in center. You have Tucker in right. And you're not going to really call up Leon to be – well, there's not going to be room for him, for one. But you're also not going to call him up and then never play him.
Right.
I'm also really curious if they even think that Pedro Leon's a big leaguer. Like, if they don't think Pedro Leon's an everyday outfielder, he just, you know, has a flash in the pan one solid year after years of frustration, quite frankly, because he was a guy who was a high prospect. He's the next, you know, not star, but he's the next guy that comes from the minor league system, takes over an everyday spot. He hasn't been somebody who has ever produced up until this season. Maybe Danner Brown's looking at Pedro Leon as, okay, we project him to be a backup outfielder. And if you look at Pedro Leon and project him to be a backup outfielder, and the Colorado Rockies think that they want to use them every day in the outfield, and they're willing to give you Cal Quantrill for them, there's a match.
No doubt.
There's a match.
It's not apples to apples when you talk about the De La Cruz trade, but it's more like in a different scenario. De La Cruz was a guy that kind of was never thought about as a top prospect, had a big year. You were able to use him to get something you desperately needed. In this case, there's a guy with a name that people have known have been in your system and at one point was a higher prospect. But if you don't see that in your evaluation, he's a guy that you see as an everyday player coming up, use him to get what you need right now and fill the void later.
3209, do you think the Astros can get Logan Webb for Myers and Spaghetti? Absolutely not. 7612, how concerned are you with Chaz? Last year looked like a starting caliber outfielder and Myers didn't. Now it's Myers and not Chaz. How consistent can they be?
I have deep concerns about Chaz. I had concerns going into this season that I didn't know that he could be who he was a year ago. I kind of, you know, that's when we had the conversations about I wish they would have found a way to bring in a bat in the offseason. But I love what Chaz has been able to do since he's been an Astro. I don't think he's as bad as he is right now, but I don't know that he's ever as good as he was a year ago. And if you can find someone that's interested in him, I'm fine moving on from Chaz McCormick.
Yeah, I don't think that Jake's been all that inconsistent. I think he was more hurt by injury. Jake is, whenever he came up as a rookie, was having actually better numbers than he has now. His defense plays. Like, his defense is top five in baseball, gold glove contender in center field. So I'm not worried about Jake's inconsistency. I think this is about who he is. 240, 250 hitter, 725, 740 OPS guy that plays a high level center field. To me, that's who Jake is. Chaz McCormick to me has always been a fourth outfielder who is a platoon guy against lefties, and I thought he had a career year last year. The problem is he didn't have any value currently.
Right.
You can't really trade him unless somebody wants to take on a reclamation project for an arm or a salary that they want to dump. All right, 713-780-3776. HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Time for Bad Take Boulevard. What are the worst takes of the week? Who are you putting on Bad Take Boulevard? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
What are the worst takes of the week? Who belongs on Bad Take Boulevard? 713-780-3776. Pena has someone that he wants to nominate for Bad Take Boulevard. Pena, who's making the list?
Hey, what's going on, guys? You know who's making the list? The guy in the other room from across y'all, B-Mac.
You just made the list!
Canelo Alvarez? He wants to say Canelo Alvarez is better than Floyd Mayweather? Boy, get out of here, man.
Get out of here.
The name of the game is to hit and not get hit. And Floyd did that to a T, man.
Yeah, he didn't say
that. I never said that, though. Problem is, I never said that.
Yeah, he said that. He said that Canelo was a bigger draw.
I said Canelo was a bigger draw, and he was more entertaining fans. I never said Floyd. I never said Canelo was a better fighter
than
Floyd.
So does that mean Pena makes the list?
Yeah, let's put Pena on the list.
False accusation.
You just made the list.
I never said that.
He never said that Canelo was a better fighter. He said he was a bigger draw, which I would like to see the numbers on that. I'd like to see the pay-per-view buys, because, I mean, there was one Floyd Mayweather, Canelo Alvarez. There's one of those guys whose nickname is Money. And
yeah,
it's
but
Floyd,
you can,
not Canelo.
That's a self-gloss,
I don't
though.
Know if Canelo has more pay-per-view buys than Mayweather.
I don't even know if I said he's a bigger draw. I definitely said that he's more exciting.
I think you said draw because it was about guys who, like, transcended their sport.
About McGregor.
Yeah, it was the Simone Biles
conversation. We were talking about how McGregor had, what, 8 of the top 10?
Yeah.
Paper.
I'd be willing to bet that Mayweather does more buys than Canelo. I think that's a... Which maybe we should put you back on the list, Brian. Put yourself back on
well,
the list.
Well, you haven't looked it up
put
yet.
Put yourself back on the list. But I'm pretty confident.
No, you look it up first.
I'm Brian's confident.
Sure do that research.
I'm 90% in this. I don't need to do the research. I still don't even think
I said that Canelo was a much better draw. I just said that fans... I wouldn't put him on the list. I didn't put him on that list of guys that transcended because people left those pay-per-views feeling disappointed because he fought a style that
we'll
a lot of people viewed as boring.
We're going to have to go to the tapes. I think you said draw, which I do think is a bad take. We'll go to the tapes. Maybe it'll be retroactive to next week. We're on the list, Blankers. Ryan put us on the list. Scotland,
you just made the list!
We said that Scotland and England... That's not what we said. We didn't say Scotland and England aren't part of the United Kingdom, according to Branham and Blank.
No, we did not.
Yes, you did, 100%. 100% you did.
Blankers might have.
No, I said...
Okay, it might have just been
I
Blankers.
Said Northern Ireland.
Yeah, okay, I think that's...
I said Northern Ireland.
I said the Scottish show. Oh, fine. I'll own it.
I don't think you said England.
No, 100%
said
England.
I did not say England.
I will find it. Now I have a mission to find it.
I didn't say England.
Yes, you did.
I said...
That's pretty bad.
I did say... But I might have said the UK.
Yeah, you said Scotland and England. I'll go back and find the tape, but it was
what countries are part of the United Kingdom. You don't want to find what you said about Canelo.
I didn't say I wouldn't go back and find. I said we'd have to go back and find.
I definitely said Northern Ireland was not in the UK because of what Google AI told me. And Google AI, I wasn't the one that was wrong here. It was Google AI. AI, you make the list. Google AI.
You just made the list.
I'm not making the list. Google AI is.
That's how I came, but it came up because I said. Didn't I say that about
Ireland? No, because we were trying to see where Roald Troon was. And Roald Troon was in Northern Ireland, and it said that the only two times that the British Open was played outside of the UK was at Roald Troon.
Because I had said that the Open wasn't played outside of the United Kingdom. I think it was in the conversation about weather. And it's like, well, it's always played in the United Kingdom. Yeah. You're like, oh, no, it's Scotland, England. It's like, well, it's part of the United Kingdom.
I think, yeah, I knew that it had been played in Ireland, and I thought that was...
Blankers is putting Paul on Bad Take Boulevard for two things he said this week. Mm-hmm. The first one was saying that Reed Sheppard is already the best white athlete in Houston.
You just made the list!
Ridiculous.
Is he even the best white player on the Rockets? I mean, they do have Alpi Shen-Yun.
Again, that's the debate that you and I always have about is he white or is he...
Alpi's white.
Is he white or is he black?
Alpi's white.
He looks white to me.
Yeah, he's white. Alpi's white. Come on.
If you were to say, Alpi, yeah, are you a white guy or are you a black guy? I'd be like, hey, he looks pretty white.
But this is the never-ending conversation of John and Lance about you. If you're a foreign guy and you're a white guy, are you really a white guy?
You're a white guy.
If the options are white or black, Alpi ain't black.
I agree with that.
So, and plus you have Kyle Tucker in the city.
Tucker was the first thing that came to mind going, how can you make that statement?
And you have Case Keenum.
And Alex Bregman.
Yeah.
Justin Verlander.
Exactly.
Now, there's a couple of those guys.
Ryan Pressly, Josh Hader.
Hunter Brown.
There's a lot.
There's a list.
We have a lot of great white guys.
Shepard's not cracked yet.
He also said yesterday that Nolan Ryan is from A-Leaf.
You just made the list.
There's not a whole lot of people that look like Nolan Ryan from A-Leaf.
No.
That's a good point, but I heard that one too, and I almost screeched off the road and go, wait, what did he say?
Yeah. Brian, I think you were the one who put this one in there. There was a caller to the bench.
There was a caller named Wood. I believe he's a regular on
Wood.
Yeah, he's a regular on John Lance. I hear him all the time. But he called in to defend the honor of Bronny James and made a comparison to some players that have worked in the NBA that I thought was pretty ludicrous.
You know, it wouldn't be start training.
Was that Nick Caserio?
Brian just made the list for the second time.
All right. Hey, Wood. What's up, fellas? Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, talking about Bronny and his bad offensive game, I mean, how much different is that from a Dylan Brooks or a Patrick Beverly? If he could be good on a defensive side and be limited offensively, you know, can he still make a difference in the NBA?
Yeah. I mean, you and I both know that would. He absolutely can. But he's got to get to a functional level offensively. Pat Beverly was actually – at one point, Pat Beverly for the Rockets, I believe, shot 40% from three. Dylan Brooks at least is over 30%, like Bronny is.
I don't know if this is an offense.
No, Bronny.
You got to get to a functional level at some point.
The comp's not good. Although the Pat Beverly but comp is not bad. Dylan Brooks
Pat
is a bad
Beverly
comp
ever shot 40% from three.
I think he did 1 year.
He did 1 year.
Yeah, I think he had a career high one year where he hit 40%. I'm not sure if it was with the Rockets, but I know he did it once. Because I used to be very critical of his shooting, too, and then all of a sudden 1 year he popped off for like 40% from behind.
Yeah, 40, I knew he was been in the 30s before, but to me the bigger thing with Bronny, why it's a bad take, is because you have to prove that you have to be at the level defensively that Pat Beverly was at,
right,
that Dylan Brooks gets credit for being at as well. Like, I don't see Bronny being that good defensively, and then I see all these shortcomings offensively, and I see the fact that he's not a big guy.
The whole premise of to begin with is he has to be an elite defensive player like Beverly and Dylan Brooks were, and he's not even there.
Right.
And then you throw on top of that, okay, even if he's elite defensively, he has to be, as Lance said, at least functional on offense, and he definitely ain't functional on offense.
No, see, I don't think this is – I'm actually going to defend Wood here because he's more saying, like, what is the path for Bronny to the NBA? And the path to Bronny to the NBA is to be a good defender who can be like a knockdown shooter and, you know, turn into a 3-and-D guy, which is his path to the NBA. For him to be a guy, I mean, well, his dad's this path to the NBA, but for him to be a guy who's like in a rotation, he's going to have to be a 3-and-D guy who's defensive-minded, defensive-oriented. The problem here were the comps. Like, he's not Dylan Brooks' size. Patrick Beverly's a better comp because he's a smaller, he's a point guard. Now, Bronny, I don't think he's a point guard. I don't think he can defend point guards. But his path to the NBA, Wood's right.
Well, but that's what I was going to say, too. The other thing is, if he comes in and people are saying he's a 3-and-D guy coming in, and then he made his first three last night after missing,
Wood didn't say 3-and-D, though. Like, Wood said his path to the NBA is being an elite defender.
Right,
which
okay.
is. Which
but
it
then
is.
On the floor, you're either a shooter or a ball handler, or you're a liability. And so I don't know how you can stay on the floor no matter what you can do defensively if offensively you can't handle the ball well enough and you can't shoot the ball well enough.
Yeah, I see. I think that's more like the scout and the like analysis of why Bronny James isn't going to make it in the NBA. Wood's just saying that he has to be an elite defender to make it into the NBA. I think that's a fair point. I don't think it's a bad take by Wood. Don't think it's a bad take. Blanker's making the list, calling Neil Diamond a rapper.
You just made the list!
Tongue-in-cheek, the first American white rapper. Yes, I've said that. And I believe that.
What was the reason? Because he talked during the song?
Because he talks through the majority of all of his songs. He barely sings. And it was said
rapping.
To be humorous, but if I make the list because of it, okay.
Do you think it was said to be humorous?
Oh, I've said it multiple times, Jeremy, with friends and others that, for the sake of humor, and got chuckles out of it.
Different audience.
We'll have to go back to the tape on that one, too.
Yeah.
To see if there's
a lot
joke
of tape to pull.
Tone.
Yeah, I've got a lot of tape to pull.
Quoting Neil Diamond as a rapper. And then the last, well, not the last one. We got two more. Nick Caserio talking today. Big baseball fan, Nick Caserio.
You know, it wouldn't be start training camp without the Astros being in first place. So I know everybody was losing their minds, so credit to them. So it's fun to follow. It's fun to follow the Astros. It's fun to follow Houston sports. And, you know, we're excited to get started here at training camp.
You just made the list!
I guess he's not following him that closely. It's fun to follow, but not to
place,
fun follow that closely. This was all part of the Nick Caserio 6-minute monologue to start his press conference today.
He probably had it on in the background at the office and heard TK when he said, even though the last game of the season before the All-Star break, if they win and they tie with the Rangers, and there's a tie with the Mariners, that they would get the tiebreaker to be in first place at the break.
I like you giving him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think he's watching Astro baseball.
Fine.
I don't think he's watching Astro baseball.
Clearly.
Quite frankly. All right, last one. Our dear
friend. I see
he had
it in the background, by the way.
Nah, I don't think that guy watches anything but football. PR Dizzle. His son, Little Dizzle. He wants the Astros to acquire G-Man Choi. Hate to do
you just made
you,
the
Little
list!
Dizzle, but we are equal opportunity haters. And you make the list for suggesting the Astros acquire G-Man Choi, who's hitting 190 for the Syracuse Mets.
Yeah, Little Dizzle. I know them both. And Little Dizzle, you got to own that one.
Got to own that one. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. What are NFL overreactions or reality that exist ahead of training camps opening? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Reality is that you need to be at Sabercats Stadium on Saturday to fear the roar. Sabercats in the playoffs, you know, Houston's professional rugby team. They were 14-2, clinching home field advantage, and now the playoffs kick off for the Sabercats Saturday, July 20th, kickoff at 6:30 at Sabercats Stadium. You know who the Sabercats are playing? The Dallas Jackals. Texas rivalry in the postseason doesn't get better than that. If you haven't been all season, now is your chance to see this action-packed sport with the highest of stakes, playoff rugby, and also the rivalry between Houston and Dallas. Plus, the fine folks at the Sabercats are wanting to take care of you. Giveaways including posters, cowbells, water if you're within the first 1,000 fans walking into Sabercats Stadium, surprise guests and appearances by Houston celebrities. And then after the match, hopefully everybody's celebrating the victory, post-match social on the pitch where you meet players, get autographs and pictures with your favorite Sabercat, and then fireworks after the match. Do not miss out on Sabercats Rugby, the playoffs presented by J Bar M Barbecue, Houston, Dallas, Sabercats Stadium, Saturday at 6:30. Get your tickets now, HoustonSabercats.com/tickets, HoustonSabercats.com/tickets.
Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Rock the Mic has returned, and it's time to find the newest Houston sports podcast. The winner of Rock the Mic will receive a podcast hosted on our ESPN Houston YouTube channel. Whether you already have a podcast or have always wanted to start one, now is your chance. You can enter by sending a 3 to 5 minute video giving your best Houston sports take to rockthemic975@gmail.com. The winner will be announced at our live finale August 23rd at Carbach Brewery. Get your entries in now to rockthemic975@gmail.com. We're going to be out at East River 9 tomorrow. I was told today I would be engineering that fine radio program tomorrow live at East River 9. We hope that you'll come out and join us, though. Great drink, great food, great golf. Watch some of the Open. Round one is complete. Dwayne Brown is your leader at Royal Troon.
Yeah,
D. Brown, huh? From England. I'm assuming that's Dwayne Brown. He is 6-under, leading Shane Lowry at 5-under. A tough day at Royal Troon for a lot of the golfers. The wind was howling, as it often is, over in the UK, which is England and Scotland and some other areas.
You want to name another country there?
Northern Ireland.
Okay. Can you name another one?
Nah, Brexiting this conversation.
Wales.
NFL pre-training camp overreactions and reality checks. Training camp's kicking off for one team today. Let's take a look at some of these overreactions or reality and give our overreaction reality. Dak Prescott will not be with the Cowboys after this season.
I'm going to say reality.
Okay.
I'm going to say that Jerry Jones, he likes big splashy things, and he's already hinted that if Dak isn't the guy, and especially if McCarthy doesn't turn out to be the guy, if this season doesn't go well, I could see him trying to blow the whole thing up with coach and quarterback.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that this is an overreaction. I don't see how they – like, there's not a better alternative. Dak Prescott's a top 10 quarterback. He's still playing at a high level. You still have CeeDee Lamb, who you need to pay, who you're going to be throwing the football to. They're going to, I think, win enough games to where they're not going to be in prime position to go after quarterback. I don't want to say that they're going to be, like, pot committed or over the barrel to keep Dak, because I think Dak's better than, you know, saying those analogies or whatever. I think Dak Prescott remains with the Cowboys after this year.
Yeah, I would say this is overreaction. And I agree with your take, Joel, that, you know, Jerry Jones liked the big splashy move. But as Jeremy said, the problem is I don't know if there's a big splashy move to be made at quarterback. And Jerry Jones, now in his 80s, you know, I can't see him hitting the reset button this close to, you know, whenever his tenure as the Cowboys owner is over. He wants to see another Super Bowl trip, and he's not going to get there if he hits the reset button. And even if they did, their pick's not going to be high. So I think they're going to be forced into paying Dak again.
Tom Brady out there for the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, it ain't Trey Lance.
Reunite him
Definitely
and Bill
not Trey Lance.
Belichick. Why not? Brandon Ayuk will begin the season with the 49ers.
I believe that is a fact.
I think he's going to stay with the 49ers. I think there's two different scenarios where he stays a 49er. I think that the most likely scenario is they just give in and pay him. And then what does that do for Deebo Samuel or the rest of the roster? You know, we would need to see the domino effect of that. I also think they just hold him hostage. Like, okay, like you requested a trade. We don't have to honor that request. If you want to hold out, go ahead. But there's a lot of ramifications for that as a player. I think that they eventually pay him and get something done. But even if they don't, I don't think that they're going to be quick to trade him. And I think they're going to call his bluff and make him report.
Agreed. I think that they still feel like that this is a year that they're in complete go for it to win a Super Bowl. He's a big part of that. I don't think that he's not on their roster for week one.
Yeah, making unanimous. They're if not the top favorite to win the Super Bowl, and probably not because of Mahomes, but they're at least, you know, top two, top three. And that changes a little bit with if they move Ayuk. He's under contract. We've seen players call for a trade, like, what was it, Kevin Durant a few years ago. I believe there's another player in the NFL that did it as well, and they didn't end up going anywhere. Eventually, they give him a little bit of money, they make up, and they come back. I think Ayuk still plays for the 49ers this season.
Yeah. The Bears will have a top 10 offense with Caleb Williams this season.
It's an overreaction. I just don't see it. I know that we've had the conversation in terms of the level, and of course there's some animosity, lifelong animosity against the Bears anyway, but just taking that out of it and looking at it, maybe Caleb Williams does turn out to be the guy, and I know that they've surrounded him with weapons. There's a lot of good offenses in this league, and I think he's still going to take, it's going to take some time for him to completely settle in. I don't think he's going to be C.J. Stroud in year one. So I would say that's an overreaction.
I think this is reality. I think the Bears will have a top 10 offense in the NFL. I love the weapons that they've surrounded Caleb Williams with. You have a two-headed monster at running back with DeAndre Swift and Roschon Johnson. I didn't include Tariq Cohen because he's going to be a Houston Texan. Just kidding, Khalil Herbert. But the receiving core is great. I mean, the receiving trio that they have is top five in the NFL. DJ Moore is fantastic and is going to be playing with a real quarterback, potentially for the first time. Keenan Allen, a little old, sometimes injury-prone, but still very good. And I'm bullish on Rome Odunze coming into the NFL as well. And I didn't even mention Cole Kmet. I do think that the Bears will have a top 10 offense in the NFL.
I'm bullish on the Bears. I think they make the playoffs. I think Caleb Williams becomes the first Bears quarterback in history to eclipse 4,000 yards. But top 10's a high bar. I mean, I just looked it up while you guys were talking. Last year, obviously, C.J. Stroud turns the Texans' offense around completely. They finished 13th in points scored. So I think top 10 is a lofty bar that's a bit too high. I think they can get inside the top 15, maybe around 13 where the Texans were last year. But I don't think they cracked the top 10, so I'm going to say this is an overreaction.
Next up, Russell Wilson will be the Steelers' quarterback all season.
Can't see it happening. I'd say that is an overreaction. I think that Arthur Smith has already given indications about the fact that he likes Fields. He's intrigued by the ability to work with him. And Russ had moments last year. He was decent, but I think that whether by injury or by otherwise, I think that Fields is going to start some games at quarterback.
Yeah, see, this to me is just a numbers game. I think there's two scenarios in which Justin Fields starts a game. I think it's an overreaction as well. I think that Fields will start at least one game. Like Russell Wilson, the likelihood to get hurt, that exists. Likelihood to get bench exists. The likelihood the Steelers aren't very good and want to see a younger quarterback at the helm exists. Like, there's a lot of potential avenues for Fields to start at least one game for the Steelers at the quarterback position. So, yeah, this is an overreaction.
I'm going to go overreaction just because of the numbers game you mentioned. There's so many pass. Even if the heart of the question, like Russell Wilson only misses one game, is because of injury, but Fields gets that one start, then you automatically end up on that side. I do think there's a path. We've seen with Mike Tomlin never having a losing season. Last year with Kenny Pickett had 10 wins somehow. I do think Russell Wilson could basically be the starter all year with the Steelers, but there's so many things that could happen with an injury. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say overreaction. Russell Wilson doesn't start every game.
Final one. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I watched that first episode of The Receiver on Netflix last night. It's not bad. Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Peyton Manning's group is the one producing that. It's not I didn't know that.
Yeah, Omaha Productions.
I thought
they produced quarterback last year too.
That's what I thought that was all kind of under the realm of HBO and
no, it's on Netflix.
Okay.
No, it's on Netflix. Amon-Ra St. Brown would lead the NFL in receptions.
We had this conversation that started last year, and you guys were telling me with fantasies and where he was ranked and stuff like that. And again, maybe it's the NFC North bias in me. I don't think so. I don't think he's going to lead in receptions. I think he'll have a top 10 year. I think he's going to have another great year. I just don't think he's going to lead the league in receptions.
I mean, it's a pretty bold take. Like, this guy's going to be the one guy who leads the NFL in all receptions. Last year, he was close. He was tied for second with Tyreek Hill, 119 catches. CeeDee Lamb led the way with 135 catches. The year before that, St. Brown had 106 catches. His rookie year, he had 90 catches. It's an offense that's going to be throwing the football around a little bit. Jameson Williams, maybe he can stay healthy. Maybe he can not gamble on games and make it a full season. But he's still more of a deep threat. Like, I don't know if him being on the field is going to, like, vulture and impact Amon-Ra St. Brown's reception total a whole lot. But to say he leads the league, that's bold, and I think it's easy to say overreaction. I think he'll finish top three, though.
I'm going to say reality, because when you look at some of these other teams with guys that you would put in the idea that they could threaten for the league, the lead league. I mean, you mentioned Tyreek. There's Jalen Waddle there. You might say a guy like A.J. Brown. There's Devonta Smith there. I mean, you could say Puka Nacua, but there's Cooper Kupp there. There's so many other – all these other guys have a running mate, Jamar Chase with T. Higgins, that I think are going to take targets away. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could put Sam Laporta in that case for Amon-Ra St. Brown, but it's specifically a wide receiver. I don't believe in their other wide receivers, so I'm going to say reality. I think Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to – Amon-Ra St. Brown. I might change that nickname for him, a sleeper. But I think he's going to get the target share to be able to lead the league in
You forgot one guy who actually led the league in receptions last year. Well, I don't think there's a whole lot of hijacking him.
Okay, who am I forgetting?
CeeDee Lamb.
Good point.
And Lamb ran away with it last year. 135 catches. Now,
that's a good point.
They don't pay him. Maybe he holds out. But, I mean, he had 16 more catches than anybody else in the NFL last year.
And there's nobody. There's no competition there.
The next best pass catcher on his team is probably Jake Ferguson.
Okay, I'm going to say overreaction. I'm going to change it only because of CeeDee Lamb.
Gun to my head, I had to pick a guy to lead the league in receptions. I would go with CeeDee Lamb to go back-to-back.
Same.
I can see that. With his contract, too, on the line.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. A certain ESPN 97.5 personality asked Nick Caserio a good question today. What was the question, and does it impact who the Texans could be looking at in free agency before the start of the year? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from our good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure and PRP treatments, and those things get your hair back, and it's a reality. A lot of people look at the infomercials and the things that are out there and all the gimmicky things that are always telling you they can get your hair back. And really, all those are ways to mask the problem, not actually solve it. Doc solves it, and that's why after going through the NeoGraft procedure and PRP, I speak from experience. It's a game changer. Both of them get the job done and do what he says they're going to do, and therefore get you your hair back. And with that, you get more self-confidence, you love your appearance, and you feel very confident again in your hairline. It's phenomenal. And as a listener to us on this station, and if you're interested in Doc Linville, you get a free consultation with him and his staff that normally costs $150 for people on the street. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com and check it out. Check it out. Sign up for an appointment. There's no money out of pocket, no commitment that you have to make, no signing on a dotted line. You just go and you meet with Doc and his staff. It's right there in the medical center. And ask questions. Get answers. They'll explain PRP, which is like fertilizing your lawn, or they'll explain the NeoGraft procedure, which essentially is like replanting sod. One thing that was really mind-boggling to me I didn't realize was that Doc told me in my consultation that you never lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. And speaking to and knowing friends that have lost their hair on top or their hairline in some way, that's true. I always remember and joked about this Julius Caesar kind of wreath on the sides and the back of their head. He takes some of that hair in the NeoGraft procedure and puts it where you need it most. You get more coverage out of the deal. It's your own hair that's going to grow and be with you for the long haul because it ain't going anywhere. It's coming from a place that it's never going to leave from, and you see the results. The true results are seen in 6 to 9 months, but the initial results can be seen almost immediately where the follicles are there, and they're going to grow, and they're going to get stronger and longer. Check him out today and tell him I sent you by because he's the best in the business, and I believe in this guy. Go see Doc Linville, 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5.